any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, and we're all needing a little help. Let me tell you, I was just sent a notice at a presentation I gave years ago, False Flags from 9/11 to Sandy Hook and Beyond, has been posted yesterday at Before It's News. So I just want anyone who'd like to take a look at one of my presentations that has been republished there, Before It's News. Check it out. Hard to know where to begin, but we have a new report from the Burning Platform, The Total War to Cancel Russia. That looks like a good place to begin, by P.P. Escobar, who is quite a brilliant guy. Best swaths of NATO stand have been corralled into behaving like a Russophobic lynch mob. No dissent is tolerated. He's got that right. Pretty fascinating stuff. Let me make sure I'm on do not disturb so we won't be interrupted if I can pull it off. By now, it's absolutely clear that the neo-Orwellian two-minute hate Russophobe campaign launched by the Empire of Lies after the start of Operation Z is actually 24/7 hate. Vast swaths of NATO stand have been corralled into behaving like a Russophobic lynch mob. No dissent is tolerated. The full PSYOP has de facto degraded the Empire of Lies, and that, of course, was how Vladimir Putin referred to the West in his speech on 24 February, explaining his rationale for the special military operation in Ukraine to the status of empire of hate and a total war, hybrid and otherwise, to cancel Russia. Hate, after all, packs way more punch than mere lies, which are now veering into abject ridiculousness, as in U.S. intelligence resorting to what else? Lies to fight the info war against Russia. And yet, yes, we have open admission now that the United States is lying about Russia. They are openly acknowledging it. If the propaganda overdrive has been lethally effective amidst the zombified Western masses, call it a win in the PR war, in the front where it really matters, inside Russia, it's a major fail. Public opinion support for both Operation Z, the intrusion, and President Putin is unprecedented. After videos of torture of Russian POWs that caused widespread revulsion, Russian civil society is even bracing for a long war lasting months, not weeks, as long as the targets of the Russian high command, actually a military secret, are met. The stated aims of the demilitarization and the denazification of a future neutral Ukraine, but geographically reach way beyond. The aim is to turn the post-1945 European Collective Security Agreement upside down, forcing NATO to understand and come to terms with the concept of indivisible security. This is an extremely complex process that will reach the next decade. The NATO stands fierce, simply cannot admit in public a series of facts that a military analyst of the caliber of Andrei Mironov has been explained for years, and that adds to their collective pain. Russia can take on NATO and smash it to bits in 48 hours. it may employ advanced strategic deterrent systems unmatched across the West. Its southern axis, from the Caucasus and West Asia to Central Asia, is fully stabilized. And if the going gets really tough, Mr. Zircon can deliver his hypersonic nuclear business card, with the other side not even knowing what hit it. Europe has chosen its fate. It may be enlightening to see how these complex processes are interrupted by Russians, whose points of view are now completely blocked across NATO stand. Let's take two examples. The first is Lieutenant General L.P. Reshnikov in an analytical note examining facts of the ground war. Some key takeaways. Over Romania and Poland, there are airborne early warning aircraft of NATO with experienced crews. There are U.S. intelligence satellites in the sky all the time. I remind you that in terms of budgets for our Roscosmos, we allocated $2.5 billion a year. The civil budget of NASA is $25 billion, 10 times greater. The civil budget of SpaceX alone is equal to Roscosmos. And that is not counting the tens of billions of dollars annually for the entire U.S. feverishly unfolding the control system of the entire planet. The war is unfolding according to NATO's eyes and brains. The Zio-Nazi, the Ukro-Nazis are nothing but free-controlled zombies. And the Ukrainian army is a remotely controlled zombie organization. The tactics and strategy of this war will be the subject of textbooks for military academies around the world. Once again, the Russian army is smashing a Nazi zombie organism fully integrated with the eyes and brain of NATO. Now let's switch to Oleg Markenko, who focuses on the big picture. The West considers itself the whole world only because it has not yet received a sufficiently sensitive punch on the nose. It just so happened that Russia is now giving him this click with the rear support of Asia, Africa, and Latin America. And the West can do absolutely nothing with us since it also lags behind us in terms of the number of nuclear warheads. Europe has chosen its fate and chose fate for Russia. What you are seeing now is the death of Europe. Even if it does not come to nuclear strikes on industrial centers, Europe is doomed. In a situation where European industry is left without cheap Russian energy sources and raw materials, and China will begin to receive these same energy carriers and raw materials at a discount, there can be no talk of any real competition with China from Europe. As a result, literally everything will collapse there. After industry, agriculture will collapse, welfare and social security will collapse, hunger, banditry, and chaos will begin. It's fair to consider Reshnikov and Mernikov as faithfully representing the overall Russian sentiment, which interprets the crude Bukha false flag as a cover to obscure the Ukrainian army torture of Russian POWs. And deeper still, Bukha allowed the disappearance of the Pentagon bioweapon labs from the Western media sphere, complete with its ramifications. Evidence of a concerted American drive to ultimately deploy real weapons of mass destruction against Russia. The multi-level Bukha hoax had to include the Brit presidency of the UN Security Council actually blocking a serious discussion a day before the Russian Ministry of Defense struggled to present to the UN, predictably minus the U.S. and the U.K., all the bioweapon facts they have unearthed in Ukraine. The Chinese were horrified by the findings. The Russian Investigation Committee at least persists in its work with 100 researchers unearthing evidence of war crimes across Donbass to be presented at a tribunal in the near future, most probably set up in Donetsk. And that brings us back to the facts on the ground. There's a lot of analytical discussion on the possible endgame of Operation Z. A fair assessment would include the liberation of all of Novorossiysk and total control of the Black Sea coast that currently is part of Ukraine. Ukraine, in fact, was never a state. it was always an annex to another state or empire, such as Poland, Austria-Hungary, Turkey, and especially Russia. The landmark Russian state was Kievan Rus. Ukraine, in Old Russian, means border region. In the past, it referred to the westernmost regions of the Russian Empire. When the empire began expanding south, the new regions annexed mostly from Turkish rule were called Novorossiya, New Russia, and the northeastern region Milorossiya, Little Russia. It was up to the USSR in the early 1920s to jumble it all together and name it Ukraine, adding Galicia in the west, which was historically non-Russian. Yet the key development is when the USSR broke up in 1991. As the empire of lies de facto controlled post-Soviet Russia, they would never have possibly allowed the real Russian regions of the USSR, that is, Novorossiya and Malorossiya, to be again incorporated to the Russian Federation. Russia is now reincorporating them as in, I did it my way, manner. Vamos a billion in European Puerto Rico. By now, it's also quite clear to any serious geopolitical analysis that Operation Z opened a Pandora's box. And, of course, that's the intrusion into Ukraine. And the supreme historical victim of all the toxicity finally let loose is bound to be Europe. The indispensable Michael Hudson, in a new essay on the U.S. dollar devouring the euro, argues half in jest that Europe might as well surrender its currency and go on like a somewhat larger version of Puerto Rico. After all, Europe has pretty much ceased to be a politically independent state, is beginning to look more like Panama and Liberia, flag of convenient offshore banking centers that are not real states because they don't issue their own currency but use the U.S. dollar. In sync with quite a few Russian, Chinese, and Iranian analysts, Hudson advances that the war in Ukraine, actually in its full-blown version as the new Cold War, is likely to last at least a decade, perhaps two, as the U.S. extends the fight between neoliberalism and socialism, meaning the Chinese system, to encompass a worldwide conflict. What may be seriously in dispute is whether the U.S., after the economic conquest of Europe, will be able to lock in African, South American, and Asian countries. The Eurasia investigation process, rolling in earnest for 10 years now, conducted by the Russia-China Strategic Partnership, expanding to most of the global south, will go no holds barred to prevent it. There's no question, as Hudson states, that the world economy is being inflamed with the U.S. weaponizing trade. Yet on the right side of history, we have ruble gas, the petro-yuan, the new monetary financial system being designed in a partnership between the Eurasia Economic Union, EAEU, and China. And that's something no puny culture cancel war can erase. The corrupt establishment will do anything to suppress sites like the Burning Platform from revealing the truth. That's a really a masterful article, a completely masterful article. And he cites the info war against Russia, continuing where we have the report about, in a break with the past, the U.S. is using intel to fight an info war with Russia, even when the intel isn't rock solid. It doesn't have to be solid intelligence, one commentator observed. It doesn't have to be solid intelligence. It's more important to get ahead of them, the Russian, Putin specifically, before they do something. This is embarrassingly bad. I published this on my blog at jamesfetzer.org. It was an attention-grabbing assertion that made headlines around the world. U.S. officials said they had indications indicating Russia might be preparing to use chemical agents in Ukraine. President Biden later said it publicly, but three U.S. officials told NBC News this week there is no evidence Russia has brought any chemical weapons near Ukraine. They said the U.S. released the information to deter Russia from using the banned munitions. It's one of a string of examples of the Biden administration breaking with recent precedent by deploying declassified intelligence as part of an information war against Russia. The administration has done so even when the intelligence wasn't rock solid, officials said, to keep Russian President Vladimir Putin off balance. Right. Coordinated by the White House National Security Council, the unprecedented intelligence releases have been so frequent and voluminous that intelligence agencies had to devote more staff members to work on the declassification process, scrubbing the information so it wouldn't betray sources and methods. Observers of all stripes have called it a bold and so far successful strategy, although not one without risk. In other words, we're openly admitting that we're lying to the world, to the American people about Russia. And I guarantee you this goes back to Barack Obama's nullification of the Smith-Mundt Act of 1948, which precluded the use of the same techniques of disinformation and propaganda, including paid riots, staged events, and the like within the United States, which were heretofore only used without. Barack Obama unleashed it all, a floodgate of disinformation and propaganda within the United States, by the mislabeled Smith Modernization Act of 2012, just in time to bring us Sandy Hook. It's the most amazing display of intelligence as an instrument of state power that I've seen or that I've heard of since the Cuban Missile Crisis, said Tim Weiner, author of a 2006 History of the CIA and 2020, The Folly and the Glory, a look at the U.S.-Russia rivalry over the decades. It has certainly blunted and defused the disinformation weaponry of the Kremlin, except from everything I can tell, the Kremlin's been very honest and open, and its reporting has been accurate. Compare RT, formerly Russia Today, now RT reporting, or that of Sputnik News, with the New York Times and the Washington Post. The contrast is simply breathtaking. RT and Sputnik News are reporting accurately what's taking place, while the New York Times and the Washington Post are just blatantly propagandizing and making stuff up, just pulling it right out of their anal aperture and telling it to the public. Unbelievable. 4 days before the end of the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962, the U.S. published spy plane photos to show the Soviet Union had deployed nuclear missiles not far from Florida's coast, probably 60 miles. The Biden admin began releasing reams of intelligence about what it said were Putin's plans and intentions even before the invasion of Ukraine began. Just this week, National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan stood at the White House podium and read what officials said was more declassified intelligence, asserting that Russia's pullout from areas around Kiev wasn't a retreat but a strategic redeployment that signals a significant assault on eastern and southern Ukraine, one that U.S. officials believe could be a protracted and bloody fight. The idea is to preempt and disrupt the Kremlin's tactics, complicate its military campaign, undermine Moscow's propaganda, and prevent Russia from divining how the war is perceived in the world, said a Western government official familiar with the strategy, except no one is being fooled except the American people, who continue to rather gullibly and naively assume that what the government is telling us about anything in the world of significance, from the COVID to the 2020 election to January 6th to the intrusion in Ukraine, is true, which is foolish in the extreme. We know better. The government is lying to us on every significant issue, not from time to time, but all the time. 24/7. This is simply the most recent blatant and overt example thereof. Multiple U.S. officials acknowledge the U.S. has used information as a weapon, even when confidence in the accuracy of the information wasn't high. In other words, even when they knew it was probably false. Sometimes it has used low-confidence intelligence for deterrence effect, as with chemical agents. And other times, as an official put it, the U.S. is just trying to get inside Putin's head, as though U.S. propaganda could accomplish such a feat. How ridiculous. Some officials believe, however, that trying to get into Putin's head is a meaningless exercise because he will do what he wants regardless. Vladimir Putin is no fool. After this story was published, a U.S. official told NBC News that the U.S. government's effort to strategically downgrade intelligence to share with allies and the public is underpinned by a rigorous review process by the National Security Council and the intelligence community to validate the quality of the information and protect sources and methods. The official added that we only approve the release of intelligence if we're confident those two requirements are met. Spot on. The biggest successes of the U.S. information offensive may have been delaying the invasion itself by weeks or months, which officials believe they did with accurate predictions that the Russian intended to attack based on definitive intelligence. By the time Russia moved its troops in, the West presented a united front. Before the invasion, the U.S. asserted Russia intended to stage a false flag attack against members of Ukraine's Russian-speaking population as a justification for war, and that the plans included a video featuring fake corpses. The video never materialized. Russia has consistently claimed it was invading to protect ethnic Russians from Nazis in Ukraine, and, of course, a host of other very legitimate reasons, including all the biolabs, sex and child sex trafficking in Ukraine and the like. In fact, the United States is the entity that used crisis actors. Take in Syria, for example, claiming that Assad used chemical weapons. We have video of the whole event where you see local civilians rushing out, lying on the ground as though they were dead, and then after the director calls cut, getting up, dusting themselves off, and going to collect their checks. It is insulting. The United States is constantly projecting and accusing Russia of the very techniques we ourselves are employing, just as the Democrats are constantly accusing the Republicans of the very techniques that Democrats are using themselves. There seems to be a close affinity between CIA disinfo operations and the Democrats' whole political agenda. Stunning stuff. The U.S. accurately predicted Putin intended to go through with the attack, even as other Western countries, notably France, argued otherwise. The head of France military intelligence agency actually stepped down over making the wrong call. A former U.S. official said administration officials believe the strategy delayed Putin's invasion from the first week in January to after the Olympics, and that the delay brought the U.S. valuable time to get allies on the same page in terms of the level of the Russian threat and how to respond. I believe it was Chairman Xi who asked that it not occur while the Olympics were taking place in China, and that Putin was, obliged. It had nothing to do with U.S. propaganda. It may have made a difference to this extent that in the more winter time it would have occurred originally, the Russian track vehicles could have moved more effortlessly than through the more muddy weather that would prevail when it actually took place. But U.S. intel propaganda had nothing to do with it. CIA Director William Burns, a former ambassador to Russia, told lawmakers at a congressional threat hearing last month that in all the years I spent as a career diplomat, I saw too many instances in which we lost information wars with the Russians, no doubt because the Russians were speaking the truth and the United States was not. That has been a real benefit, I think, to Ukrainians. The policy has drawn lavish praise, even from some Republicans. You are spot on in your intelligence, Representative Brian Fitzpatrick of Pennsylvania, said at the House annual worldwide threat hearing last month, addressing Burns and other intel agency leaders. Your decision to declassify, both the form and the fashion in which you did so, saved lives. Sleep well, and thank you for doing that. But the strategy has its dangers. Among them is getting something clearly wrong, could be extremely damaging to U.S. credibility and play into Moscow's hand. Too late. Disclosure as a deterrent. As the war has proceeded, the administration has used intelligence to warn of possible Russian action and draw attention to Russian military failings. At times, the Biden admin has released information in which it has less confidence or about things that are possible rather than truly likely. Last week, U.S. officials told reporters they had intel suggesting Putin is being misled by his own advisors who are afraid to tell him the truth. But when Biden was asked about the disclosure later in the day, after it had made headlines around the globe, he was less than definitive. That's an open question. There's a lot of speculation, Biden told reporters. But he seems to be, I'm not saying this with certainty, he seems to be self-isolating. The degree to which Putin is isolated or relying on flawed info cannot be verified, said Paul Pillar, a retired career intel officer. There's no way you can prove or disprove that stuff. Two U.S. officials said the intel about whether Putin's inner circle was lying to him wasn't conclusive, based more on analysis than hard evidence. Other officials disputed that, saying the intel was very reliable, had been vetted at the highest levels. But that's ridiculous. You cannot have trustworthy allies who are not going to be honest and candid with you, especially in the context of a military operation. I think this is just more, shall I put it in technical language, bullshit coming from the Biden administration. In another disclosure, U.S. officials said a reason not to provide Ukraine with big fighters is that intelligence showed Russia would view the move as escalatory. That was true, but it was also true of Stinger missiles, which Biden has provided, adding that the administration declassified the big information to bolster the argument not to provide them to Ukraine. We're going to hit the break now, more when we come back.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either." Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Hey, hello, everybody. Welcome back. This is The Raw Deal with Dr. James Fetzer. Jim must have run off and not come back yet, so I'll step in here a second. I hope you're doing well, Jim. But, yeah. Hey, everybody, come on down. Join us at freedomslips.com, revolution.radio, where the truth never sleeps. So, ladies and gentlemen, you haven't heard, where's Jim? Hey, we're going to send a search party out for Jim in a minute. It seems to be a common occurrence lately. He's just trying to escape and evade the New World Order. Now, that's what Jim's doing. But there he
Mitchell,
is.
Thank you for picking up, Mitchell. Every now and then, things take a little longer than I anticipate. Very well done, my friend. Very well done. There are a few more aspects of this report which I want to continue to share, which are very, very telling. Likewise, a charge that Russia had turned to China for potential military help, black card evidence, a European official and two U.S. officials said. The U.S. official said there is no indication China is considering providing weapons to Russia. The Biden admin put that out as a warning to China not to do so. The European official described the disclosure as a public game to prevent any military support from China. Game or not, U.S. intelligence officials say it has been successful. Intelligence is rarely definitive, and Biden officials have calculated in some cases it's better to preempt something that might not happen than to stay silent and watch it unfold. It doesn't have to be solid intelligence when we talk about it, a U.S. official said. It's more important to get out ahead of them, Putin specifically, before they do something. It's preventative. We don't always want to wait until the intelligence is 100% certainty that they're going to do something. We want to get out ahead to stop them. The official said there was an extensive discussion about whether to reveal that Russians had a blacklist of Ukrainian enemies whom they intend to arrest and possibly kill once they seize control, which is, you know, obviously Russia had targets here in Ukraine, but to call it a blacklist, you see, this is a way of spinning it using language to make it sound as though the Russians are doing something improper when they're being very clear about their reasons for entering Ukraine and the necessity to clean up the pit of inequity there in Ukraine, which has been a bastion of the New World Order, and where you look at it this way. Nancy Pelosi's son, Mitt Romney's son, Joe Biden's son, John Kerry's son or stepson all have positions on gas company boards in Ukraine. What does that tell you? And what would you expect that the kind of propaganda the Democrats can leverage out of the American government when they're so powerfully in political control? This is just outrageous, self-serving, corrupt to the max. In fact, Ukraine may be the most corrupt state ever manifest on the face of Earth. But the intelligence appears to have been borne out by witness accounts from towns Russia once occupied and now left, where political assassinations have been documented. But that's just more of the reports from the town where we know the Russians had long since left, that the bodies were not in an advanced state of decay from having been left on the street for 3 weeks, that it was Ukrainians who shot them, that they were shooting people who'd accepted, you know, food packages from Russia. So the idea, what we got here in this article, is even more of the same nonsense. More of the same nonsense. Here's a winner just come in. I'm going to be publishing. The Luciferian endgame control, killing our God gene to destroy our faith in our Creator. This is from Joaquin Hagopian. This is not about woo-woo New Age hyperbole, but hardcore scientifically, empirically driven evidence that the Earth controllers have created a DNA-altering bioweapon to not only depopulate our planet, but to kill the VMAT2 God gene that allows humans to connect with our source creator that major religions typically refer to as God. This is rather intriguing for an agnostic as I am, of course. I may find this not completely persuasive, but I admire this man enormously, and I'm most certainly going to do publish it on my blog for the with. Meanwhile, we have a host of other issues. We have the Whitmer kidnapping case. I mean, look, if you had any belief that the FBI was a good guy, that it deserved its reputation as the world's leading investigative organization, you've just been deluded. Here's a nice piece from the Political Insider. Whitmer kidnap case collapses following acquittals, mistrials, as FBI tactics are called into question. Two men were acquitted and a jury deadlocked in the trial of two others in a case involving an alleged kidnap plot for Democrat Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. Adam Fox, Daniel Harris, Brandon Caserta, and Barry Croft each faced kidnapping conspiracy charges. Harris and Caserta were found not guilty. The charges against Fox and Croft ended in a mistrial. The kidnap plot allegedly had been discussed at a meeting in Ohio around June of 2020, where plans were hatched straight through until October, just prior to the election, when six of the men were first arrested. 14 individuals overall were arrested in the bizarre plot, with 13 pleading not guilty. This is one of those cases where the FBI was running the whole shop. You may remember back in the 30s and the 40s, there would be communist cell party meetings where every member present was an informant for the FBI. This is a pretty close facsimile. Where the kidnap plot is in a disarray after the FBI's questionable tactics and agents have been arrested. The New York Times described the latest result as a major blow to the Justice Department, which during the Biden administration made domestic terrorism one of its top priorities in the aftermath of the January 6, 2021 riot. The Times noted lawyers for the defendants had successfully argued the supposed plot had been conceived and nudged ahead by a network of FBI agents and informants. Issues with the actions of some FBI agents also loomed over the trial. Though little that was discussed explicitly, little of that was discussed explicitly in front of the jurors. Defendants in the Whitmer case have insisted they were victims of entrapment by an overzealous and severely compromised FBI investigation. A shocking BuzzFeed report from late last year indicated the case was being complicated by an array of issues involving the FBI's handling of the case. The case seemed like a lock, they reported at the time, until an informant and one FBI agent were charged with crimes, another accused of perjury, and a third found promoting a private security firm. Of course, the plot was Trump's fault, as are all of the ills facing the United States today, including soaring gas prices, the open borders, the failure supplies. Those are all the fault of Donald Trump. The alleged plot to kidnap Governor Whitmer was used by the media to portray Trump supporters and Republicans as violent extremists just before the 2020 presidential election. Interesting timing, right? Former FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, in an interview with CNN, said the plot was very serious and dangerous. I can tell you from my own experience, having dealt with literally dozens and dozens of similar plots during my own time in the FBI, that this one has all the hallmarks of a very serious, dangerous situation, and we're all fortunate the FBI and the partners got in the middle of it. That's a bit too much. It seems they got a little too in the middle of this supposed plot. Whitmer also blamed former President Trump's rhetoric for inciting the plot against her. What else would she say? When our leader speaks, their words matter. They carry weight. When our leaders meet with, encourage, or fraternize with domestic terrorists, they legitimize their actions and they are complicit. When they stoke and contribute to hate speech, they are complicit. Even Biden has pointed the finger at Trump. White supremacists and these militias are a genuine threat. I've got to compliment the FBI and police agencies for what they did and how they stepped up. But look, the words of a president matter. His words, even. Joe Biden's words matter, and they're clumsy, they're awkward, they're embarrassing, they're full of falsehoods. They've embarrassed and humiliated the United States of America that this man should be occupying that office. And I've proven again and again, it's not even the former senator from Delaware. This is an actor, a body double impersonating the real Joe Biden. If you check some of the photographs, there's a great one showing Joe and Hunter together, and they're both looking in the same direction, and you can both see their ears. They both curl up. They have what's known as pendant ears, meaning there's a little lobe, right, that hangs down. Well, not everyone has pendant ears. The present guy playing the role of Joe Biden does not have pendant ears. Not only that, but there are more serious indications, although ears, it turns out, are as distinctive as fingerprints, that shows these aren't the same guys. Right off the bat at the first debate, James Woods, the actor, was calling out the party there as having the wrong color eyes. His eyes are brown now, or Biden's were blue. I have reported many times there's a difference in the shape and size of the skull. The real Joe Biden had a broader skull, a heavier skull. The new guy has a narrower skull. Well, you can get your hair cut. You can have shorter hair, taller hair. You can stand up. You can sit down, still be the same guy. You can't have two different shapes and size of skull and be the same guy. Michigan investigative journalist Charlie LaDuff scoffed at the case against those who allegedly plotted to kidnap Whitmer, saying the claim stunk from the start. These guys were yakking off on Facebook like we all do. It went overboard. The FBI got wind of it and started leading them down the path. I don't know about the rest of the media, but I said this thing stunk. LaDuff sold Fox News host Tucker Carlson. Jury reads the same verdict. There's a difference between mouthing off and then the Fox feds walking you to a case. This is all very good stuff exposing the chicanery of the FBI, which we know, and I previously reported also occur on January 6th, where the FBI were instigating. Nancy Pelosi was in charge. She, as the Speaker of the House, has control of the Capitol Police. It would have been possible for those events to take place without Nancy Pelosi's complicity. I believe she actually orchestrated the whole event. With the complicity of the FBI, no doubt the attorney, this was prior to Merrick Garland becoming AG. But it's absolutely stunning to stop what's going on here. And where a fellow named Ray Hipps was an especially prominent FBI figure who is instigating, invading, going into the Capitol and creating havoc, where he orchestrated the access routes to the Capitol so that those who are coming from the Trump presentation at the Ellipse, which was a mile and a half away, where Trump did not finish speaking until 1:11. Whereas the events at the Capitol had already begun at 12:45, and where no Trump supporters could even have been present, not only have the police already called for reinforcement, but there'd already been intrusion, there'd been, you know, these kinds of hassles, though most of the police were simply letting them in. This was the objective. It was just loaded with FBI informants and their agents. And we even have a report from John Sullivan, the brother, James Sullivan, the brother of John, who's a prominent Antifa leader, that John led 226 Antifa members into the Capitol dressed as Trump supporters in order to create the impression that this was a mega rebellion when it was nothing of the kind. You'll find Trump supporters, by and large, are very reasonable, ordinary people who care about the nation. They are well-behaved. They wouldn't think of doing this kind of thing. So it had to be contrived. Not surprising there. More and more is going on here, by the way, with one case after another. Here's a very disturbing report about the way in which the vax is showing up, even at a major tennis event. Buried bombshell. Tennis world rocked as 15 fully vaccinated players are unable to finish the Miami Open. Who's ever heard of a single player unable to finish their participation in an Open? And here you had 15. Get this. Tennis fans are upset and the sporting world is reeling after an unprecedented number of players either withdrew or retired from the Miami Open this week. A total of 15 players were unable to finish, including the male and female favorites to win. The tennis world reacted with shock after favorites Paula Badosa and Jannik Sinner had to retire during the quarterfinals of the Miami Open. Badosa, assumed to be the number three in the world, became unwell during her match against Jessica Pegula and left the court in tears. Badosa, who was comforted by her American opponent, decided to stop after consultation with her physiotherapist. Pegula reached the semifinals of the Miami tennis tournament for the first time in her career after Badosa's resignation. In the men's tournament, the Italian phenomenon Jannik Sinner was forced to withdraw. He gave up after 22 minutes in the game against Francesco Cirandolo, the number 103 in world rankings. When I served at 3-1 and 30-0, I saw him bend over. It was very strange. Cirandolo said during an interview, I hope he's okay. He's a great player. The 23-year-old Argentinian surprisingly reached the semifinals with his first participation in the Master Tournament in Miami. It was the second game in a row ending prematurely for tennis fans. They reacted with shock to the bizarre tennis day. What is going on, someone asked. Nobody is pointing to the obvious. All of the players must be fully vaccinated in order to compete. Just as we've noted for several months, most major sports have been hit with inexplicable medical conditions popping up in young and otherwise healthy athletes, including our report that three cyclists fell in March alone. Folks, this is the jab. There is no other viable possibility, especially when you consider how even the CDC and other agencies have acknowledged that COVID vaccines cause increases in heart problems for young people, including myocarditis, pericarditis, and heart attacks. There has never been as much gaslighting and propaganda geared toward covering up the truth than with these injections. Leaders across the country and around the world have so much wrapped into the vaccines, one has to wonder who's pulling the strings. Some of it is personal. Any politician who comes out with the truth about the jabs will be pushed out of office faster than Will Smith's exit from Hollywood's elite club. The same is true for journalists. Corporate media is just as invested and possibly even more complicit in spreading the lies. But it may be worse than that. Like so many things we've witnessed over the last 3 years, there appears to be a coordinated effort to suppress the truth. Pandemic panic theater is still in action, despite the odd February push by Democrats to lift most face masks and vaccine mandates. There already talks of fifth and sixth jabs, even as the fourth jab gets rolled out in the United States. Is this all part of the Great Reset agenda? Is this all about control, depopulation? The answer to all three questions is very likely yes. I can add definitively yes. There's no room for doubt about it. These injections are dangerous. Athletes across the globe are falling. Average people are experiencing horrible adverse reactions, tens. Perhaps hundreds of thousands are dying from that. It could even be millions. The data is so obscured. All the while, politicians and corporate media are pretending it all always is. There's nothing to see here. There's nothing to see here. Absolutely stunning. Nothing to see here. Right. Just unreal. Meanwhile, Matt Gaetz, who's actually doing a great job in Congress, among the very few I would praise, along with Marjorie Taylor Greene, intermittently Rand Paul, and occasionally a few others, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin is a controversial pick to lead the men and women at a time when America's enemies, and here they list, Russia, Iran, and China, though I most certainly do not believe Russia or Iran are enemies of the United States, are building massive fighting forces. American military leadership appears to be laser-focused on pushing concept series and attitudes that weaken our military and make our military less popular with the citizenry, and one D.C. insider has had enough. You guys have been blowing a lot of calls lately on matter strategy, Mr. Secretary Matt Gaetz said to Austin. You guys told us Russia couldn't lose. You told us the Taliban couldn't immediately win. So I guess I'm wondering what's in the $773 million bill you're requesting today. is going to help you make assessments that are accurate in the face of so many blown calls? I think Matt Gaetz has it exactly right. Just a word or two more on what Joaquim is suggesting here about the God gene. I certainly respect every individual's right to freedom of religion and religious belief. I'd be dumbfounded if there were actually a gene, a genetic basis for it. Religious belief, of course, varies from person to person, region to region. We have dozens of different religions, including, of course, the three great Abrahamic religions of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, but a host of others, Zoroastrianism, Seventh-day Adventist, name it. There have been a vast range. Now, there are also significant segments of the population, much smaller in number, that are either agnostic, namely neither believing in God nor disbelieving in God, or agnostic, believing there is no God, which is a very different position. It's a definitive stance on the existence or non-existence of God, unlike the agnostic position that I represent. In my conclusion, that it's impossible to prove or not to prove the existence of God, which, of course, is why it's an article of faith. Those like myself who adhere to what's known as the ethics of belief, advocated by the British philosopher William Clifford, believe that it's always and everywhere wrong to believe anything for which you do not have sufficient evidence. Now, I respect the right of everyone to believe as an article of faith what they may believe about God, immortality, and afterlife. I'm not disputing that right. I'm merely observing, for someone with a background in scientific reasoning and philosophical research, that I'm not going to accept beliefs that I cannot substantiate by evidence. That's why in my research I make an effort to bring in collaborators who are experts in areas where I am not. So as a result of our collaborative effort, we can get things right. One person has a certain probability of being wrong, no matter what their background or credentials. But if you put together other experts, 2, 3, 4, and you have to multiply the probability of them being wrong, and it becomes smaller and smaller the more you bring together. Thus, in relation to Sandy Hook, I brought together 13 experts, including 6 current or retired PhD professors, a credential important because it's a certification of your ability to conduct research in a serious, competent fashion. And you all know the result, with which we concluded. Right back after this break.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Fight back! Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio. 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 Radio.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
The issues raised by Joaquin's speculations about a God gene are sufficiently interesting and provocative that I want to take this opportunity to address differences between genetic and cultural evolution. Very few are aware of what goes on here, where there are major differences in the ways in which genes are reproduced and survive to become part of a subsequent gene pool, which is at the very center of evolutionary theory, where we have a certain amount of diversity in the gene pool that's caused by multiple sources, including genetic mutation, sexual reproduction, genetic engineering, even something called genetic drift, where you have, subpopulations that are isolated and having to deal with different environmental factors, which leads to the survival of certain traits in subsequent gene pools within the subpopulation, which appears to have been a major way in which the various races emerged from genetic roots that appear to have had their origin in Africa and then spread throughout the various continents. Cultural evolution, which is a very different matter. This has to do with customs, traditions, practices, clothing, food, right? We celebrate differences between different kinds of cuisine, right? I happen to like Indian food a lot. My wife doesn't. There's a wonderful Indian restaurant here in town. A dear friend of mine now departed took me to a Korean restaurant. I'd never had Korean food before. I was astonished at how delicious it was. Well, think of all the clothing and the differences between Chinese, Japanese, American, French, European, Indian modes of dress and all that. Those are things that change across time on the basis of very different causal mechanisms than the genetic. Now, among the most brilliant work on this subject is a fellow named Bonner, who published a book where he talked about genetic versus cultural evolution. Bonner made the following observations using the word memes, M-E-M-E-S, to be a counterpart to genes, where memes are ideas or practices or traditions, which turn out, of course, to be highly variable from one culture to another or one subpopulation of a culture to another, versus genetic. Here's how he put it, genetic evolution versus cultural. Genes can exist independently of memes. You know, you can have the same genes, but you can have different ideas, different practices, wear different clothing, blah, blah, blah. It sounds obvious, but here's putting it precisely. With regard to cultural evolution, however, the opposite is the case. Memes cannot exist independently of genes, and that's because memes are a property of organisms that are developed from genes. Second, there's a one-time transmission of information nearing conception for genetic transfer. Just as in sexual reproduction, we have the contribution of the female ovum and the male sperm to produce a new combination, a new genetic combination. But notice, that happens once. At conception. Contrast that with cultural evolution, multiple opportunities for information transmission, right? Just to give a trivial example, you can change your mind. You can learn things you didn't know before, come to believe things, many of which may be false. But there are multiple opportunities for cultural evolution. You can decide you like a new band rather than an old. When I discovered Queen, it was very late, but Queen is just absolutely sensational. And love the movie Bohemian Rhapsody, which most certainly deserved the Academy Award, by the way. If you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it. But, of course, my all-time greatest band is the Beatles, bar none. Nevertheless, that's just an illustration. Third, genetic evolution, very slow, bound by the rate of reproduction. This is one of the reasons why we have a problem with a famine, you know, emerging here, because it takes a long time to plant the seeds, to grow the crops, to harvest the crops, to get them in, and why the massive destruction that's taken place, you know, even including in Ukraine and Russia, is going to have vast consequences. Versus cultural evolution, changes very fast, bound roughly by the speed of light, thinking. Think of it. How quickly can a new song become popular worldwide? Well, if it's broadcast by radio or television around the world, it can happen extremely rapidly. Now, yours truly, in my various publications about this, including especially the book, The Evolution of Intelligence, add to Bonner's distinction. With regard to genetic evolution, they affect permanent properties. Genetic evolution affects properties that cannot change during your lifetime. Let me hasten to add, we now have to introduce a new qualification because it appears this mRNA technology and the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines actually change your DNA. It is flabbergasting. But that appears to be the case. Permanent properties are ones that, given other properties, you cannot change. They cannot be violated. It's like the melting point of gold or the boiling point of gold. When gold is defined in terms of its atomic structure, it has permanent properties. The permanent property relationship is the foundation for law-like statements. When we talk about the laws of science, and hypotheses, scientific hypotheses, they are generally attributing permanent property relationships between entities that are of one kind in relation to properties that it has as permanent properties, which is why if you know, if H2O water has a boiling point of 100 degrees centigrade, it's going to be the case for water samples everywhere. All water, all H2O is going to have the same freezing point, the same boiling point, where it turns from a solid into a liquid into a gas. All the laws of physics, chemistry, and so forth are reflective of permanent properties. Cultural evolution, however, affects merely transient properties. These are properties you can gain or lose while still remaining the same thing or a thing of the same kind. It's like, as I say, you know, wearing a hat, not wearing a hat, you know, singing a song, not singing a song, belief in religion, non-belief in religion, a whole host. Your political views can change and evolve and develop just as virtually all your other cultural attributes. Fifth, the mechanism of genetic change are Darwinian, including genetic mutation, natural selection, sexual reproduction, artificial selection, genetic engineering. Those are how genes change. Those are all sources of genetic diversity, which get filtered out by, you know, features of the environment, where if the organism has the ability to adapt to the cultural challenges, it can survive and potentially have its genes reproduce in a subsequent gene pool. The mechanisms of mimetic change, however, are Lamarckian. Remember, there was this Russian scientist who believed in the inheritance of acquired characteristics, for example. If you learn French, if your parents had learned French during their lifetime, or your mother, say, had learned French, then you would be born knowing French. Well, we realize that's absurd, that's unscientific, because that is an acquired characteristic. But the mechanisms of transfer for ideational or cultural components actually is a matter of acquisition, and that they can be acquired by classic conditioning. Remember Pavlov's dog, where a bell was set off at the same time the dog was fed, and the dog acquired an association between the sound of the bell and being fed, so that it would now salivate merely at the sound of a bell. Operant conditioning. This is reinforced behavior, where you're rewarded for behavior of one type and possibly either not rewarded or even punished for behavior of another, where B.F. Skinner, the brilliant psychologist, animal psychologist at Harvard, could even teach pigeons to play ping pong by way of operant conditioning. Another is imitative learning. A tremendous amount of our learning is by imitation. If I'm working on a legal brief, for example, it does me tremendous benefit to see a properly constructed legal brief that then shows me the elements that need to be included. An awful lot of our cultural attributes are acquired by imitative learning. And this, and it's very sad to say, has had a profound impact upon the younger kids, toddlers, learning how to speak when their parents were wearing masks, because they were deprived of the operant, of the imitative learning of how to form words, how to shape words, how their mouths should work, so that among the absolutely devastating consequences of all this mask wearing is that we're going to have a whole generation of young kids who are handicapped in relation to their speech and their ability to emit sounds. And frankly, I do not know if this is something for which there can be compensation. It's going to affect their learning lifelong. And I dare say those who brought us the pandemic and the lockdown, Anthony, Tony the Rat, Fauci, most prominent among them, but Bill Gates, the World Economic Forum, Ted Turner, a host of others who've been promoting the worldwide genocide. And sad to say, Donald Trump, who implemented the lockdown, committed the greatest blunder of his career, of his lifetime, bar none, because of the damage it's wreaked upon the United States. But then you have the criminal enterprises of the CDC and the FDA and the NIH, all of which have been promoting false beliefs about medicine in the pandemic, which was never a serious threat. The whole idea of the pandemic of COVID was nonsense, since it has a 99% survival rate. In other words, COVID should have just been treated the way it was, as though it were flu. Maybe call it a stronger variation. Many of you are now aware how they really fabricated the pandemic, where the year before there were 38 million cases of the flu. The following year, when they introduced COVID, there were fewer than 2,000. So do you think 37,998,000 cases of the flu simply disappeared? No, they were just renamed. They were labeled COVID. And the consequences, the horror story that has followed, was the inevitable result. Also, however, the mechanisms of mimetic change include logical reasoning and rational criticism. This is why I offered courses in logic, critical thinking, and scientific reasoning for 35 years, to develop, to inculcate those powers of reasoning and learning that are indispensable to attaining the highest functions of the human mind, exemplified by the capacity for criticism. I merely mention in passing, by the way, that I am doing this course on critical thinking and scientific reasoning, Conspiracy 101, on Wednesday evenings from 8 to 9 o'clock, 15-week course. We had the first session on last Wednesday. We'll have the second this coming Wednesday. Where for those who register for the course, they'll have access to the videos of the preceding classes, and you'll be able to access them. There is a registration fee to enroll in the course of $150, which is the equivalent of $10 per class session. I am trying to provide the principles that are involved in developing the higher levels of mentality, of logical reasoning and critical thinking by means of this course. So you may want to consider, if you want to follow up and learn more, go to my blog at jamesfetzer.org and check out Conspiracy 101, Critical Thinking and Conspiracy Theories, because we're going to use conspiracy theories as illustrations. The first six class sessions are going to be involved in introducing you to the principles involved, including for informal fallacies that are committed all the time. And then the principles that will be applied to the critical theories, the conspiracy theories, and we'll make an assessment, especially of how we know they're false, how we know they cannot be sustained, where I emphasize the methodology advocated by Sir Karl Popper, the great British philosophy of falsificationism, that the way to tell whether a theory is true is by attempting to falsify it. If you're unsuccessful in falsifying a theory given serious efforts, then either the theory is true or you've simply not figured out how to falsify it as yet. And we're going to discover how powerful a technique this is compared to looking for confirming instances. Because in virtually every case of these conspiracy theories, there's fabricated evidence, phony evidence, reports that are false testimony to substantiate. So if you were not adopting a critical stance, you might very well be persuaded into believing that these conspiracy theories are true. They've done it again and again and again. Among those we're going to consider, JFK, 9/11, Sandy Hook, a whole host of other, you know, events, including even the moon landing. We're going to talk about the pandemic and the vax. We're going to cover quite a panoply. So you can check it all out on the syllabus, which you can find at the sources I've cited. You could also go to Mix, M-I-X, capital N, mixandstream.com/critical-thinking.html. That's Mix, M-I-X, capital N, stream.com/critical-thinking.com. It's not too late to enroll in the class, and all the materials for the course are being provided as a part of the course. And as I say, even though you would perhaps, if you were enrolling now, miss the very first class, the video from the very first class is available to you there, as are research materials that I'm adding to them as we proceed. For example, I was talking today about how the U.S. is adopting all these techniques of using propaganda to the American people, openly acknowledging they are lying to the American people. Well, there's a very nice video that goes along with it that I'll be adding to the homework for this course. So think about it. Here's a perfect example, by the way, of fraud being perpetrated on the American people. In the Wisconsin State Journal today, on page A5, there's a story, UN. Nations that went green raked in money. I can't begin to tell you that this is complete bullshit, that the green agenda is based on phony science. It has no substantiation. And I may indeed be adding that to the homework assignments because the situation is so appalling. Let me give you an illustration. The great threat to the environment is supposed to be CO2. Well, it turns out that CO2 actually cools the Earth in four different ways. CO2 is indispensable for life on Earth. Plus, while we're told that the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere creates global warming, over 600 million years of the Earth tracking atmospheric CO2 versus average global temperature, there is no correlation. There is no correlation. High or low CO2 is independent, completely unrelated to the average global temperature. The average global temperature has gone in cycles of increases and decreases over the last 4,500 years, for example. There have been at least 75 major temperature swings. So I don't want to disillusion anyone, but the fact is we're being scammed. Even in cases where there are correlations, like with regard to the MMR vaccination and autism, there's a virtually perfect correlation. The more vaccinations, the more autism. The fewer vaccinations, the less autism. It goes together. Now, even when there is a positive correlation, as in the case of vaccines and autism, the companies manufacturing the vaccine, Big Pharma, have put up a huge fight and argue there's no causal connection. Well, there clearly is a causal connection, but they could still argue it in spite of the correlation. The point I want to make is the opposite. If there is no correlation, there can be no causation. And in the case of global warming and atmospheric CO2, there is no correlation. Therefore, it's not even possible that CO2 is bringing about global warming. It's not even possible. So you have airheads like AOC and Pelosi and the Democrats who have their own agenda. I mean, look, getting rid of gas and oil would be so destructive to America's economy that it's dumbfounding what it would do to the quality of life of Americans. But here are some new reports that may shed light from the completely practical point of view. Nothing theoretical about this. Listen, the Daily Caller. A mad scramble. One rare mineral may spell doom for electric vehicle market. Lithium, a mineral that's key for electric car batteries, continues to rise in price, jeopardizing the ongoing transition to renewable energy outlined by Western governments. The cost of lithium has skyrocketed more than 250% over the last 12 months, hitting its highest level ever, according to an industry index from Benchmark Mineral Intelligence. While the cost of manufacturing a lithium-ion battery for an electric vehicle, or EV, has fallen sharply over the last decade, the decline has slowed in recent months due to rising lithium costs. The average cost of an EV battery pack fell to $157 per kilowatt hour, a measure of energy capacity in 2021, the Department of Energy reported in October. That means a typical EV battery is between $6,000 and $7,000, a Bloomberg analysis showed. Battery costs would need to come down to $100 per kilowatt hour for overall EV prices to compete with traditional internal combustion engine cars, which, of course, run on gasoline. The price of lithium will play a larger role in achieving that goal. It's like being in a hot real estate market, Lithium America's CEO John Evans told the Wall Street Journal. There's a mad scramble. Lithium America's has proposed to mine lithium on a dormant volcano in Nevada. However, the firm is yet to mine lithium due to pushback from environmentalists and ongoing lawsuits regarding the allegations that the federal government approved the company's mining permit too quickly. If the mine begins production, it could help reduce U.S. reliance on foreign lithium and increase supplies at a time when demand for the mineral is surging. The U.S. has roughly 750,000 metric tons of lithium that can be mined, but it produces very little and imports tens of thousands of metric tons worth from Argentina, Chile, China, and Russia, according to the U.S. Geological Survey, the USGA. The USGA report withheld specific U.S. data to avoid disclosing proprietary information belonging to companies like Lithium Americas. Converting and processing lithium into the actual components of an EV battery may also prevent prices from falling. China currently dominates the battery processing market and is responsible for about 80% of global battery chemical refining capacity. Meanwhile, Western leaders have vowed support for aggressive measures to push consumers toward purchasing EVs, even as their next new vehicle. In the U.S., President Biden outlined a plan for 50% of new car purchases to be zero emission by 2030. Now, let me just mention, there are all kinds of problems here the government isn't sharing with you as to why this would be a disaster. I'm going to continue after our break reporting on this because it's so central and important. And I think once you know, you'll understand why this whole green energy thing is a scam, even at the lowest level of driving an EV. Meanwhile, let me mention, I believe we were in Afghanistan for all those years because Afghanistan is one of the largest lithium deposits in the world, where lithium is used for components and computers, for triggers of nuclear weapons, and for electric car batteries, rivaled only by a gigantic deposit in Bolivia. Right back after this break.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Ooh.
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Let me just add that I've been doing a series of interviews about global warming and climate change with Joe Olson, who's a brilliant engineer, qualified across the field in electrical engineering, mechanical, civil, structural, just a fantastic guy. He was a co-founder of Principia Scientific, which is becoming a major expositor of scientific findings about issues of public importance. And you can find the series where we've done 8 or 9 different episodes on my BitChute channel, Jim Fetzer. BitChute channel, Jim Fetzer should get you there. And just do a search for ACW. Joe's used that acronym for anti-global warming, or just look for climate change. You'll find them. They all have a blue cover. You want the very first. Start with the very first, where we talk about these overall issues about the lack of correlation between the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere and the temperature of Earth. There is no correlation. I hate to say that means even like Al Gore with his Inconvenient Truth, which when I watched it, I found very persuasive. I thought he was talking about a real issue. And then we have all these fanatics who think that the world is going to come to an end if we don't go to green energy and want to destroy gas and energy, which is part and parcel why Joe Biden canceled the XL pipeline and withdrew the permits to drill on public land, where Donald Trump had brought us to the stage of energy independence. We were actually becoming exporters of energy. And now Biden, by these misguided policies, which have had calamitous effects on the United States, we're once again dependent on foreign sources. This is not progress. This is bad. And the consequences are going to be stunning. Oil, by the way, is not actually a fossil fuel. That theory has long since been discarded. It turns out oil is a natural product of the Earth. And, you know, the Earth is a very complicated entity, and it has many layers and levels, and it's actually possible. You may recall the big oil spill from drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. That's because they went down and tapped into this vast reserve of oil that the Earth produces naturally. It appears to be an inexhaustible supply of oil. So, you know, Our future is secure with gas and oil as an economy. The prices will continue to cut down, more and more efficiency. But if we go electric, and if we deliberately annihilate gas and oil industry in the United States, as many of these airheads are intent upon doing, the consequences are going to be catastrophic. Here's another, just regarding electric vehicles. It's a huge problem. California's sky-high electricity prices bring a shock to Biden's EV dreams. This is, again, from the Daily Caller, doing a great job in this area. California electricity bills are among the highest in the nation and are set to continue skyrocketing, putting state and national green ambitions in the spotlight. The state's largest energy providers reported average monthly bills dwarfing those of other states in 2021, E&E News reported. If prices keep rising, as current projections say they will, electric vehicles will continue to be more expensive than traditional gas-powered cars. The surging prices could act as an impediment for the electric vehicle industry in the state. Democrat Governor Gavin Newsom signed an executive order in 2021 banning new traditional gas vehicles by 2035, while President Biden outlined a nationwide goal of having electric vehicles account for half of total car sales by 2030. 2030! This is already 2022! Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg has repeatedly said Americans should buy electric vehicles to avoid the fluctuating cost of gasoline. But that's saying nothing about the cost of electricity. It's a huge problem. Severin Borenstein, director of the Energy Institute at the University of California, Berkeley, told E&E News, "We're going to mandate electrification, and then there's just going to be a huge political blowback," he added. Mandating electrification when you're charging people 30 or 40 cents a kilowatt hour is going to be immensely expensive. Borenstein added, consumers may be discouraged to transition to electric vehicles if they hear about the high charging costs via word of mouth. The 2021 monthly bill average, meanwhile, is estimated to have been $136, $133, and $150. For SCE, PG&E, and SDG&E customers. Prices are only projected to go up from there, hitting $162, $164.50, $221.50 per month for the three respective companies in 2030, according to state data. If you want people to make big investments in electrification, there needs to be some kind of a payoff for them, said Mark Toney, executive director of the Utility Reform Network, at a public forum, and the payoff has got to be we make electricity rates look very affordable by comparison to the alternative. Tony said California lacks a strategy for showing the positive impact of electrification for consumers. The California Public Utilities Commission noted in a 2021 industry report that it's cheaper to fuel a conventional internal combustion engine vehicle than it is to charge an EV. And they are, of course, gas. Southern California Edison, Pacific Gas and Electric, and San Diego Gas and Electric, the state's three largest utility companies providing more than 65% of California residents with power, said their average March bills were $149, $165, and $150, respectively. That means SCE, PG&E, and SDG&E customers paid 33 cents, 30 cents, and 38 cents per kilowatt hour, respectively, in March. The average price of electricity nationwide was estimated to be 10.59 per kilowatt in 2020, the latest federal government data shows. Here's another. Get this. Biden. Save $80 per month with a $55,000 electric car. It'll only take 63 years for the savings to pay for the car. On Thursday, President Biden told Americans he was going to be honest with us and assure us that we would save $80 a month if only we bought a new electric car. Oddly, he somehow forgot to mention how long it would take to pay off that car to get to the point where savings would finally kick in. Speaking from the South Court Auditorium at the Eisenhower Executive Building, where, by the way, he has a fake studio, a fake Oval Office, where there's an auditorium there. All the reporters know it's fake. They're somehow not mentioning that to the American people. Biden gushed about the technology of the next generation of electric vehicles, claimed they would be a boon for Americans. Under his plan, Biden crowd, a typical driver will save about $80 a month from not having to pay gas at the pump. What a wonderful saving. That's a whole $960 a year, less than a grand. But there's a big problem with realizing this fantastic saving Biden has planned for us. One has to buy and pay off a new car before any savings it might offer can be realized. According to NBC News, the average purchase price of an electric vehicle in February was $60,054. According to the New York Post, it was even higher. Citing Kelley Blue Book, the Post reported, the average price of a new electric vehicle in February was $64,685, citing data from Edmunds. That's a huge hike over the average price that everyday Americans are paying for cars today. Adding, the cost of an electric car is nearly 2.5 times the average price of a new compact at $26,196, almost twice the average of a new compact SUV at $33,732, and 52% more expensive than the average sports car at $42,555. Also, just going by Biden's savings, if you spend at least $60,000 on your electric car, your $960 annual saving would take 62 years, 6 months, and 2 weeks to get to the break-even point, even on the price of that car. The inconvenience of charging an electric vehicle was also ignored in Biden's savings calculation. A depleted battery will you leave you searching for charging stations that are not only much fewer in number than gas stations, but leave you at the mercy of charging speeds that could mean hours of waiting until you are back on the road. Think about that. Hours of waiting while you recharge your battery. You can fill your gas tank in a couple of minutes, max 5. But if you got an electric battery, you got to charge it at a charging station, it can take hours and hours to charge. Then we have to figure in the geopolitical cost. EVs are manufactured using many of the rare earth elements that come from China. Greater manufacturing and use of EVs necessarily enriches China, the most oppressive nation on earth. There's also the dirty secret that neither Biden nor any other greeny Democrat wants to talk about. Pervasive use of EVs means not only higher taxes, but brand new taxes imposed on many of us. Drivers already pay a per gallon gasoline tax to pay for the roads. If fewer are buying gas and paying that tax, government will look for new revenue sources. One proposal has that revenue coming from a mileage tax. And with a tax like that, we're giving the government a brand new way to tax us, not to mention track us with government-owned devices installed in our cars to tally the miles we drive. Finally, it will also be a blow to the used car market. The EV industry said that EV battery packs, which cost between $5,000 and $20,000 to replace, last between 5 and 20 years. Who would want to spend $15,000 to $20,000? Yes, that was 15, not 5. $15,000 to $20,000 to replace on a used EV, only to expect to have a $20,000 battery replacement bill looming over your head. It just wouldn't be worth buying a used EV. And that's another stealth cost on American consumers to be forced to keep buying new cars instead of paying one-third of the cost of a reliable used car. No wonder GM is committed to phasing out gas-powered cars and going to exclusively zero-emission vehicles by 2035. With all these factors added into reckoning of buying an electric vehicle, Joe Biden's $80 monthly saving easily gets lost in the shuffle, as most things do over the course of 63 years. Remember, this whole idea going to zero emissions is all based on the myth that CO2 is a hazard to our health and is warming the earth. And that is false. That is provably false. It's not even remotely scientifically tenable because, as I've already explained, there is no correlation between the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere and the average global temperature. Absent a correlation, there can be no causation. This is just insanity. Not only is it going to destroy the quality of life in the United States, but think about the mobility restraints. Right now, you could, you know, gas up and probably go, I don't know, depending on your car, maybe 400 miles on a tank of gas. And in 5 minutes, you can tank it up and go another 400 miles on a tank of gas. You know what you got. You know it's reliable. Well, suppose you were making a similar trip that was, say, 1,000 miles in an EV. When you run out of electricity, you got to find a charging station. And, yes, it is part of the Biden plan to create more charging stations. But imagine the amount of time. It'll take hours to charge your battery. What are you going to do in the meanwhile? What's that going to do to your plan? If you have to make two of these stops for hours to charge, you may indeed have to stay overnight somewhere. It would not have been necessary had you been using your gas-powered vehicle. I was explaining this to my wife. And she was drawing the appropriate inference that an EV would be great as a second car to use around town. But it's obviously catastrophic for taking a trip. And remember, all this is a panic-driven hysteria over false beliefs about global warming and CO2. CO2 is indispensable to life. Trees and bushes and so forth convert CO2 into oxygen. That is part of their function in life. Study the life cycle of life on Earth and the role of CO2, and you'll understand we are being played. Absolutely stunning the extent to which we are being played. Let me use this opportunity, by the way, just to reflect again about the God gene, the idea of a God gene. If there were a God gene that was possessed by every human, then the question becomes, what exactly is the function of the God gene? Does that mean anyone with a God gene is going to believe in God? Now, if you notice that not all people believe in God, then either there is no such thing as a God gene that disposes people to believe in God, or the situation is much more complex. It could be the case where there are a God gene that it is a predisposition. It means that someone under certain circumstances could be induced to or become a believer in God, about which there can be no doubt. This is true of our beliefs in general. We have predispositions to believe things under appropriate causal circumstances. We learn in many different ways. We learn from reading. We learn from doing. We learn from hearing. We learn from example. We learn in the classroom. All of those are ways that can causally affect the state of our beliefs. What's most significant then is that if our beliefs are not true, since we act on the basis of our beliefs, assuming, of course, that they are true, since after all, we believe them because we take them to be true, then if we believe that global warming is a serious problem and CO2 is at fault, then we may take actions either individually or collectively as a nation that are actually counterproductive if our ultimate goal is to live a happy life in a secure environment at a reasonable cost so we can all pursue life, liberty, and happiness. I mean, if the real goal is that we want to avoid being manipulated by those who are seeking to affect us by inducing false beliefs, that's why studying critical thinking and conspiracy theories is so very, very important. You want to be able to disabuse yourself of false beliefs, even if you're being bombarded by reports from every direction. think of the unrelenting propaganda we're getting about Russia as one illustration, where the government is even openly admitting it's lying. We're expelling Russian diplomats. We're banning Russian products. We're imposing massive sanctions. I dare say the one not improbable outcome of all this extraordinary Russophobia is to lead to a retaliation. If all of this sanctioning and so forth were to become an existential threat to the existence of the Russian Federation, then Vladimir Putin no doubt would take action in the national interest of Russia. In fact, that's what he has done in Ukraine. Ukraine was becoming a threat to the national security of Russia. He explained all this in his magisterial speech of February 24th. You can find it on my blog at jamesfetzer.org, referring to the West as an empire of lies. And frankly, he's got it right. The West is an empire of lies. Absolutely stunning. So that the West is propagandizing, encouraging Europe to take various measures that are counterproductive. I believe a primary objective of the whole, exaggeration about what's taking in place in Ukraine was to induce Germany to no longer secure gas from Russia. Think about it this way. The Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which is a massive source of cheap energy for Germany, was about to be operational. It only required approval by the German government. The idea here was to forestall that from happening. Because think about it this way. If Germany is benefiting from cheap energy from Russia, that's going to improve commerce and interaction between Russia and Germany, which would be appropriate and a very good thing. But from the point of the military-industrial complex, it would be horrific for the following reason. If there are improved relations between Russia and Germany, which is the center of the European community, then inevitably there are better relations between Russia and Europe. It means it will expose that NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, is a relic of the past. It's no longer necessary because Russia does not pose a threat to Europe. And where if NATO is unnecessary and dispensable, the Europeans don't have to pay the money to participate in NATO. And more importantly, from the point of view of Lockheed, General Dynamics, Boeing, and so forth, they don't have to shell out vast sums of money for expensive military equipment, which has no other function. This is one reason why investing in American military is not beneficial to the economy. These are limited-use products. There's a very narrow band of suppliers for, the kind of steel involved in making tanks, treads on tanks, and the diesel engines that run them, and a host of other issues. Very limited. Most products, like automobiles, have a multiplier effect. You buy an automobile, you're getting a stereo, maybe leather upholstery, the interior, lights, electrical system, the whole lot. That has a multiplier effect because it benefits a whole lot of different industries alike. So manufacturing automobiles, it's a boon for the economy. But manufacturing more tanks is not. It only goes to the military-industrial complex. It doesn't benefit the economy generally. And therefore, I suggest this whole idea going to electric cars is going to decimate the automobile industry. They're too expensive. Most people aren't even going to be able to afford them. They're going to be impractical to drive. My wife has it right. Great for a second car. But if you take the United States after off of gas, energy, and gas and oil and coal, which is abundant, because of a false belief about CO2 bringing about global warming and representing a threat to the existence of life on Earth, when the opposite is the case. CO2 is indispensable for life on Earth and plays a role of cooling Earth in four different ways, as Joe Olson and I reviewed during that series on climate change you don't want to miss at my BitChute channel, Jim Fetzer. Check it out. then we're going to send the economy into a tailspin. We're already heading in that direction, but it's all by design to destroy America. I mean, tragic to say, for the first time in our history, we have an administration that is governing, in control of the executive and the legislative branch of government. It is actually actively trying to destroy America. Just take the southern border as a perfect illustration. They're allowing millions of illegal immigrants into the United States. This is going to permanently change the demographics of the United States. There is no border, not enforcing a border. With no border, there's no nation. This is also part and parcel of implementing the North American Union, where Canada, the U.S., and Mexico have no borders. But it's at tremendous expense to the American people. Our quality of life is dropping. Because of these bans and sanctions, the value of the dollar as a currency for the world is diminishing. Going to go to rubles or yuan is going to emerge. We got the BRICS system competing with SWIFT. All of these actions, in fact, every single action taken by the Biden administration has been destructive of the United States, which is why I say if you want to get a fix and understand what's going on, then just imagine George Soros as the acting president. George Soros has vowed to destroy America. He'd like nothing better in his lifetime. The Democrats, the fake Biden, and the whole kit and caboodle are going right along with it to the tremendous detriment of the United States. And I say Donald Trump, for all of his flaws, and the man is imperfect in many different ways, seems to be the only one who really has a political stature and the allegiance of enough Americans to a sufficient degree to put a stop to it. I can only hope he will take some action, because otherwise, when they steal the election in 2020, the midterm, where we know that the Democrats ought to lose 100 seats in the House and 3 or 4 in the Senate, I am afraid all hell is going to break loose, because it's going to be apparent to the American people that the Democrats are liars, phonies, and thieves. If it's not already apparent, it will be apparent by then. And I frankly will not be surprised if Americans were to take up arms to oppose tyranny and end it. Reread the Declaration of Independence. When in the course of human events, you know, a government becomes unresponsive to the will of the people, it's the people have the right to take arms against the government and replace it. We're headed in that direction. I can't thank you enough for joining me today. Spend time with your family and loved ones. You need to spend time. We do not know how much time we have left. Thanks for being here.
This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect Triangle, live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The Perfect Triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the Perfect Triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle, with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict.